When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to District Baseball. Congratulations, you just hit the best baseball source on the internet, on the interweb, on social media. Find us everywhere. Follow us on Twitter at District Baseball. We are on YouTube at District Baseball as well. Oh, wait, no. Twitter, we are at District BSB because of the character limit. Twitter got you there. District BSB on Twitter, District Baseball on YouTube, and District Baseball on TikTok. First and foremost, apologies for no episode last week. Life got in the way and just a lot of stuff going on, but we're going to cover all the things that we missed last week on this week's episode, so can't wait to dive into that. Before we get to all of that, Trey, what's going on?
Nick, I'm out of town, which is why we are in this current setup of audio-only podcast, but we will be back, should be back for next week. I will be going home this weekend, but the reason I'm out of town is because I'm going to see a baseball game on Wednesday. I'm going to get to see Mr. Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, and also the best player out of all of them, CJ Abrams. So I'm excited to do that, and I'll probably have a video going up as well on the channel for from that experience. I'll be filming some stuff, but yeah, so that's where we've been, and that's why we're here in this kind of audio only temporary setup, but we'll be back to normal next week. But either way, I feel like we should head for a three up, three down intro. What do you say, Nick?
Let's do it. Can't wait.
All right, well, we got some interesting stuff that happened last week. A couple interesting moments and a couple really great performances. And we'll start with a great performance over the last week, which is Ellie De La Cruz. He has been unbelievable since the eclipse. And I saw a tweet from
a very specific benchmark.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from the Reds, which is why I say that. Eclipse De La Cruz, Ellie's numbers since the solar eclipse on April 8th, 359, 479, 846, 6 homers, 12 ribbies, 13 runs, 5 stolen bases for a 1.325 OPS. He's going absolutely nuts. Congratulations to Ellie De La Cruz. I think I might have picked the wrong Cruz as my MVP, although O'Neill's had a decent night tonight. Okay, but our first down for today is going to be the Twins. They are just struggling with injuries. It's been a problem for them for feels like years at this point, but it has not started any better this season. Carlos Correa has hit the injured list. Max Kepler just came off for his season debut, I believe, tonight. And obviously, Royce Lewis going down in game one was a huge bummer. So they have not really recovered from that. I think Joe Ryan had a short injured stint as well, but he just came back. Yoan Duran still as well is in rehab. So they really are struggling with some injuries. Hopefully they can get healthy because the teams around them are playing a lot better than everyone thought. But our second up is Travis d'Arnaud. He had a 3-homer game, Nick. 3 homers, 1 game. And that last home run was a grand slam. Now, we don't love the Braves here, but we have to give credit where credit is due. Travis d'Arnaud is probably the best backup catcher in baseball because he probably should be starting
second
somewhere.
To Riley Adams, just saying.
Second to Riley Adams, of course. But that's really cool. 3-homer games are rare and fun. Our second down is actually not necessarily that down, but more so for the equipment manager, because Josh Naylor loves to go nuts when he hits big home runs, and he has been on a tear recently. So he hit a homer, and his helmet got the worst of it. He slammed his bat on his helmet, like four times. I'm not really sure how he's not concussed, but you know, maybe he is. I don't know. Maybe it helps him, gives him superpowers.
Quality helmet. Preventing the concussion. You know,
absolutely.
Whatever, whoever makes that helmet, like, you know, that's your commercial. That's your ad campaign right there.
Yeah, Fanatics definitely doesn't make those helmets. Somebody else definitely does. Our third up, my God, Mason Miller. This dude is insane. He is touching 104. He is going out and just mowing down some of the best hitters in the game, including today. His performance against the Rangers the other day was pretty damn special as well. But today he just mowed down Anthony Volpe, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge like it was nothing. Struck Juan Soto out on 103 up in the zone. And, you know, it's pretty rare for Juan to give a look like, what the heck was that? Because he's one of the best hitters in the game. But I tell you what, when they got a shot of his face, he looked a little befuddled at that pitch. Mason Miller is just amazing. It's one of the few things that the A's have right now that is really fun. Unfortunately, he probably will be traded because he is good. That's the unfortunate part. But hopefully it's not to the Braves. And finally, our third and last down was a Rockies fan interference call on a Jacob Stallings potential walk-off home run in a 0-0 game at Coors. So just a lot of weird stuff happening on this particular day. But Jacob Stallings hit a ball deep to left field. It might have been going out. Maybe it wasn't. It was really, really close. But a fan got in the way, and they called interference. I do think the Rockies went on to win that game. So at least it didn't cost them a win completely. But it's just very Rockies for something like that to happen. And they haven't been. That was one of their few wins this season. I believe they've only won five games. So, yeah, just some really weird stuff going on this week, but that was three up, three down.
Yeah, a lot of stuff, and obviously we could probably do like nine up, nine down with how much stuff is otherwise going on in baseball. But yeah, there's a lot to tackle there, mainly the injuries. Like we touched on that last episode with all of the big names going down with injuries, but it's still happening. Still happening. And it, you know, obviously there's a ton of big names that are getting injured, but it's also the bullpen arms, the depth pieces, the young guys. Like this is an epidemic. Like, yes, Tommy John and just major arm injuries, surgeries, what have you, have become more prevalent over the past 10, 20 years or so. You know, as guys get stronger and put more pressure on their arm, and you know, the big talk right now is only focusing about velo and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So this is naturally going to happen, but it just feels like this year in particular, like it's just so widespread. There's not a team that's really not impacted by it. And it's like this, you never know when it's going to hit. Like it could hit any team at any moment. So it sucks because obviously we want the best players on the field, and I'm sure baseball does too, for, you know, its own product and entertainment value and whatnot. But it also is sort of feels, and we're going to touch on this, you know, throughout the rest of the episode, that the better teams, the best teams, when it's all said and done, are just going to have the healthiest staff. Maybe not the best staff on paper in terms of like, if everyone's healthy, how do these staffs line up like we do in the off season? It's just, you know, September, October, who is left standing? Who is the best of those left standing? So this is really where depth pieces are going to need to be a priority. I'm very curious to see how it impacts the trade deadline because, you know, the logical thinking is, oh, if someone goes down, we need to trade for a guy. Well, if someone goes down and he's still under contract for two, three more years, like how aggressive are you actually going to be to replace him in the lineup in the rotation? Right. So it there's like a various domino trickle down effects that it's going to, you know, happen. And obviously it depends how long they're out, but most of the time we're seeing it's out for the year. Right. So it's just a very interesting thing. And for the Twins in particular, since that's the team you brought up, like it's also a team that didn't really do a lot in the offseason. They made the playoffs last year. They won a playoff series for the first time in forever. Right. Like they had gone multiple playoff appearances without a single win right? Not just a playoff series win, but like a playoff win, a single game, right? And they won a playoff series last year. So to come back and not really do anything to support that effort, to support that cause, now you're seeing the ugly, you know, the ugly side of things, where if you purposely kind of just rest on your laurels and accept complacency or whatever, right? Mediocrity, you know, the Twins were fine last year, but for all intents and purposes, they're mediocre. This is what happens, right? You deal with injuries, you can't survive them, and you're struggling. And all of a sudden, the teams that you didn't think were going to be good are good, and they have since leapfrogged you. And teams like the Royals in particular, like, were very aggressive in the offseason, and they're, you know, they're fine right now, but like, they're off to a better start. The Guardians, who everyone kind of discounted, they're back to their pitching lab ways, right? And they're getting some offense because of a philosophical change in approach for their offense, and not as contact first as they have been in recent years. They still, you know, aren't a powerhouse in terms of dropping bombs, Bronx bombers, or anything like that. But, you know, they're changing their approach. So all these teams will leapfrog the Twins, even in a weak division. So that's just a long-winded way of saying, like, injuries are always a part of sports, always a part of baseball. But this year, it seems like teams are going to be, need to be more prepared than they have been in recent years. Otherwise, it's just going to be a really wacky season and postseason, and whoever's the healthiest team at the end of it is going to win.
Yeah, I mean, we press the depth button a lot in these episodes, but this is exactly what we mean. It's like, if you don't have guys that can come up and just be, you know, up slightly above average, right, you're going to find yourself in trouble. And yeah, I think you're right. I think whoever's healthiest at the end, I mean, that seems to be kind of a standard thing, but especially this year, it's like, with the arm injuries, it's just who's going to have a rotation that's full, that even is fully healthy, or not even fully healthy, but just healthy enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough. I'm not really sure how you fix it, other than having a full scale back of the amount these guys are pitching, in total. But even then, there's no real, like, conclusion about it. Does that help? We don't know. Like, we don't really know exactly what's causing everything and exactly how to fix it. That's the issues. So yeah, it's going to be a long time, and more data is needed as well with the pitch clock, because that's pretty new. So mm-hmm. We'll just have to wait and see on that, but definitely sucks.
Point being, like, it won't get fixed this year. So they, you know, need to just find ways to work around it, work through it, manage it. You know, I think the word's escaping me, but I think the straightforward answer would be 6-man rotation. I think the straightforward answer would be fewer games, or at least more days off. But for the latter, owners don't want less games. That means less money. You know, more days in between is doable, but you're starting the season in, you know, probably mid-March, which I'm fine with personally, right? But then that kind of, you know, changes the landscape of what other sports are going up against. When does spring training start? How long of an off season do you have? And I'm not even sure the players would want that, because that's cutting into their kind of quote-unquote time off, right? So, and then if you go 6-man rotation, well, that changes starting pitching contracts, and then suddenly they're not as valuable, but you're already paying guys. Like, you know, there's a lot to figure out. But that's also kind of the direction we're trending, like you said, Trey. So it'll be interesting to see if there is any attempt at some sort of resolution, or if everyone just chalks it up to, like, hey, this is just part of the game. And
it's it sort of feels
it's going to be the latter in that regard. So we'll see. But also part of the game is teams doing or not doing what we expect. And if you're talking about a team that is doing the opposite of what was expected, I don't think you need to look very far other than the Los Angeles Dodgers. We got a firsthand look as Nationals fans at them last weekend. And I can tell you, if you are dropping a series to the Nationals after the Nationals just dropped a series to the Athletics, you're in trouble. That panic button needs to be well within reach. Maybe not pressing it because it's still April, but that panic button, you need to make sure that thing is active, the batteries are in, plugged in, whatever. Like, that panic button is very real. We have seen teams time and time again. You don't need to look any further south than, you know, I-5 and look at the San Diego Padres and ask them how many super teams have failed, right? So you look at the Dodgers and their super team, they should be so much better than they are. And again, it's April, so there's plenty of time. I fully expect them to still be in the playoffs, but they are struggling. All of the kind of concerns, the possible potential concerns we had about this team are just blatantly obvious at this point in the season, mainly the pitching. But they're just not getting enough out of their kind of stars right now. And they don't have the depth because of all their injuries to really support subpar by superstar standards from their superstar players.
Yeah, so they've lost three series in a row now, which is crazy to even think that that could happen, but it has. They lost to the Padres. They lost to the Nationals, which is hilarious. They only scored 7 runs in that series, by the way. That's wild. And then they lost to the Mets most recently. And yeah, it has mostly been the starting rotation, which has been, you know, banged up and also bad. Bobby Miller went to the IL. Gavin Stone has like a 6 ERA. Yamamoto has been okay, but he hasn't quite settled in.
He's a $300 million pitcher right now.
Not right now, but I feel like he's starting to settle in a little bit more. So we'll see on him. And then Glasnow gave up 6 to the Nats, which is crazy, although he's been fine other than that. Pretty much the main thing other than the starting pitching, though, has been the clutch hitting. They just haven't come through. They loaded the bases 4 times in one game against the Mets and then lost. That's pretty insane. Ohtani specifically hasn't been very good with runners on base, although he's been good in every other situation. So they just are looking for some more clutch hitting. Also, the bottom of their order is a black hole. They have not much hitting depth down there right now. And they're really missing Michael Bush, I think, because he could have been a guy down there.
He is on fire right now, too, by the way.
Yeah, and he is going off, but they would love him right now in that 7 spot down there, just to give him a little bit of something at the bottom of that order. Because Kike and Gavin Lux have just not been. Chris Taylor is like 1-for-50 or something crazy. Like, he's
very glad the Nats did not end up signing him.
He has not been very good, so. They're going to need some more from the bottom of their order. Maybe a prospect can come up and help. That Michael Bush trade, I think they might be regretting that one a little bit right about now.
It was a weird trade even at the time. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, they were trying to just – I guess they didn't feel like they had a spot for him, which, I mean, kind of fair because Ohtani's taken up the DH and Freddie Freeman's their first baseman. But I don't know, man. Stick him in left field. I mean, the bat is good enough.
You find a spot for him. Like, James Outman was a great story last year. He's been terrible this year.
Yeah, he's
Chris
not
Taylor
so
is
hot.
Terrible right now. Like, Max Muncy is a terrible defender. Even if he's hitting, you find ways. You just find ways. It was just mismanagement on the Dodgers part. They were way too cocky, thinking they had this super team. And you know,
which
they still might, but they definitely shot themselves in the foot making a deal that didn't need to be made.
Yeah, I think they're gonna be okay, but right now 13-11, they're kind of just treading water in that division, although the NL West has not been nearly as good as we thought they were gonna be to start. But we'll have to wait and see on that. More unexpectedness probably heading into our third topic here is Boston. Their starting pitchers have been immaculate. That is really almost no other word to describe it. They've only allowed 23 earned runs in 23 starts, which is bonkers. They've actually allowed, I think, just as many unearned runs. So I don't think their defense is helping them that much. But you know, Cutter Crawford's got a 0.6 ERA. He looks amazing right now. I don't think it's going to stay that low, but like, I'm looking at him as a potential, you know, 160 innings with like a 3. And Tanner Houck had him through a Maddux the other night, 94 pitches, 9 innings, shutout ball. That is impressive. He's been really nasty for a while. It's just kind of been where do you put him? Is he a reliever? Is he a starter? They haven't really figured it out. I think he's going to stick as a starter. He's kind of been a two-pitch guy before, but I like that he's trying to go towards more of a changeup slash splitter as his, for his third pitch. It's really helping that sweeper get guys more off balance. But they've been really excellent. And then the Mariners are also starting to find it with their pitching. Yep. I know that your Kirby pick started a little rough, but he had a really good outing the other day with seven Ks. Luis Castillo had seven shutout innings in Coors Field. So, you know, anytime you can do that at Coors, that's a pretty good sign. And then Bryce Miller has been the best in the rotation so far with a 1.85 ERA, absolutely dealing since his first start where he got a little bit roughed up. But both of these teams are really getting it going with the starters. We expected that from the Mariners. What mm-hmm. do you make of this Boston pitching staff?
I mean, I can't really say, oh, it's no big deal when I just talked about whoever's healthiest at the end of it all, you know, is going to maybe not win it, but be there at the end, you know. It's surprising. I think Andrew Bailey's the pitching coach there, right?
I believe so. I'll look that up while you.
Yeah.
While you
go. So I'm pretty sure it's Andrew Bailey. He deserves a ton of credit. I mean, like there's plenty of people, and these are the types of people that drive me insane. That thank you. The ones that say like pitching, hitting coaches don't matter. That it's a managerial philosophy that dictates, you know, what pitchers do. What, that's just completely untrue. That's like saying offensive and defensive coordinators don't matter in football because the head coach is like one or the other. It's so silly. That being said, Andrew Bailey is clearly making a big impact there because there's guys that were on this Boston team last year that don't look anything like they did last year in a good way. They were average or to below average last year and are contributing in meaningful ways this year. I mean, Trey, you just read off the stats. Like, this Boston team is interesting. Like, I don't know if
Brian Baio too. I didn't mention him, but that's another guy.
He was solid really last year. Yeah, he was solid last year.
He seems to be taking that next leap forward, which is big because they just extended him.
Yeah, right. So it's like this is how the the foundation for teams gets laid, right? Where it's like all of a sudden, you know, you find something kind of unexpected. It's like, okay, we have something here. Let's build upon it. You know, if this pitching staff is for real, or at least can, you know, at least be close to what they are right now, just a solid top half, top 10 rotation in baseball, then they can work on the defense. Maybe they can add a bat at the deadline. Maybe they can add help to the bullpen. Like, you know, this is still the Boston Red Sox. Granted, I don't understand what they were doing in the offseason. They were acting like a small market team. So I don't think all is well in Boston, but this rotation seems to be pretty good because whatever they're teaching or preaching or whatever implementing, it's working. This is not a fluke. Like, you know, with so many guys turning their careers or seasons or whatever around and contributing at this level, it's clearly like widespread. It's not just one or two guys out of the five or six guys that are in the rotation are doing well. It's everyone. So I got to believe that it's a philosophical implementation led by Andrew Bailey, and it's clearly working. And this is a team that is probably ahead of schedule than many people initially thought.
Yeah, well, because when in the offseason, my issue with it was that they didn't add pitching.
Right.
Mostly.
They traded away Chris Sale, who looks great right now.
Yeah, actually, he's pitched pretty well. And then they also had James Paxton, and they let him walk as well. So I was like, what are they doing? But, you know, right now it looks pretty good. So maybe they got – yeah, when some of those depth guys become prominent players, like a Houck or a Cutter Crawford – that's when you really got something going. So good for them. We'll see. If I don't think there's no way this current pace lasts. Otherwise, it'd be the best pitching staff in the history of baseball.
No,
But they should be able to at least monitor this and keep it going. And their pitchers have also gone deep in games too, which has helped their bullpen, because their bullpen isn't amazing, but they've pitched pretty well this year because they haven't been taxed, and they were definitely taxed last year.
Right.
A team with Sox in the name, by the way, moving on.
Before we go that far, I hate to derail your transition. I just want to quickly talk about the Mariners, just because.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I've alluded to it before. I think my time with the Blue Jays has come to a close.
Oh, yes.
And it's unfortunate because I had really high hopes for us together. But you know, we've had a rough couple years. And I think it's time for us to both find a fresh start.
Yeah. You know, so some people have different priorities. Some people prefer pulled fly balls.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I, you know, still wish them the best, no ill will, but I had been looking for a new team bandwagon. I said as much on the show. I had made the decision last week. Obviously we didn't get to record last week, but now that we're back, my announcement is I am now signing a contract with the Seattle Mariners. The length is not to be disclosed. I haven't opted out at any time. but I
welcome to the team.
I'm really a big fan of the Seattle Mariners. The pitching staff is great. That's obviously where my bias leans. George Kirby was my Cy Young pick. You didn't even mention Logan Gilbert, who's been pitching really well too. And Brian Wu hasn't pitched. So yeah. It's like, you know, they have six legitimate guys that would be top three arms in most rotations right now. And, you know, again, health matters. So knock on wood, I hope they stay healthy. But furthermore, great color scheme. Their mascot is a moose. I should have seen this in the beginning.
my men's league team, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, my men's league team actually uses their logo as our like logo. So it's like it was kismet. Like I've always belonged in Seattle. I'm excited to see what we do this year. The AL West is definitely ours.
Oh, for sure, 100%. Getting off the schneid and getting that division title.
54% of games, baby. Here we go.
54%, baby. Here That's all you need. That's all you need, Jerry. All right. Yeah, but welcome to the team. And yes, their offense is also Happy coming around as well. They started very slow, but they're getting it going. Cal Raleigh's homered in like three straight games, I believe.
The big dumper
is doing it. Anyways, before you rudely interrupted my amazing transition that everyone was on the edge of their seat anticipating, we're going to talk about the White Sox because they're really bad. this might be one of the worst teams in the history of baseball when it's all said and done, especially if they don't get healthy, because Luis Robert is basically all they have, and he's not played much this season. But fun stats, or I guess not so fun if you're a White Sox fan, although I'm sure you're used to it at this point. Seven shutouts already this year. Seven shutouts. That is
good?
Insane. And I'm surprised they haven't gotten no hit yet. They've been close a couple times. Wheeler got 7 2/3 no hit innings before they actually scored that game somehow. That wasn't one of the shutouts. So they were getting no hit in that one. They didn't get shut out. That wasn't even the one I was talking about, because they've been shut out so many times. I really don't know. They might win 45 games, dude. This team is really bad. And I mean, that might be is that an overreaction in April? I don't know, honestly. They really cannot hit. I mean, this is a very, very bad offensive team. Martin Maldonado is hitting like 0-28, and he plays like every day. And it's just weird. It's weird that this has been allowed to happen for so long. And now we're seeing them at their absolute rock bottom. I'll pose you this question. Do the White Sox get to 50 wins?
I think you should be able
to get to 50 in a season, but man. Right.
I think they will get to 50. I'm not convinced they get to 55, though.
It's going to be close.
Like, genuinely, it's going to be close. Like, this team is really, really bad. And it's the injury aspect that you're talking about. Because, like, we've seen Luis Robert win games. four for four, two home runs, seven RBIs, those kinds of games. He had one earlier this year. So if they're healthy, yeah, it's baseball in July, August. Teams that should be doing well aren't. Teams that shouldn't be doing well are, just because they're all professional baseball players. But this team is really, really bad. And, you know, color me shocked that Korean Cy Young Award winner Eric Fetty was not enough to write the franchise. So, you know, this is just another example of, like, you get what you get. Like, we talked about it with the Twins. Certainly talked about the White Sox. Like, I get it's a very transitional time for the franchise. Traded away Dylan Cease. You know, it seems like they're probably going to trade away Robert, maybe Jimenez, Moncada, if they have, you know, takers for them. And it's just full reset. But, yeah, this team stinks. I really like the Crotch Rocket, though. I think he's pretty cool. I like his story going from reliever to starter. But that's about it. And I still hope Michael Kopech.
He's got some great stuff.
But Michael Kopech, in my mind, my headcanon is like, he's the oldest prospect ever to be a major leaguer. Like, it's, you know, I feel like we've been talking about, oh, this is the Michael Kopech breakout year for 4 years now.
He has not been able to stay consistent or healthy.
Yeah. So this team is really, really bad. And in a really bad division. So you would think they would be able to, like, win some games against teams in their division. But nah, I don't see it that way. This team's really bad.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In other news, Travis d'Arnaud hit another homer tonight.
Did he really? Jeez.
So he's gone nuts. Pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care to talk about that. I mean,
you pretty much nailed it with that. Well, yes, of course, we all know this. It's very common knowledge. Braves are in fact cheating. We can't prove it, but we know it.
What did I nail it with?
what you said about the Sox. I mean, it's just.
Oh yeah.
It's rough, but yeah, with Luis Robert out, it really is not good because he can win you games. He's that kind of impact player. What do they trade him at this point? I mean,
I think they have to.
I mean, do we see like a Soto-esque 2.5 year of control trade from them to try and get some haul? I feel like at this point, being, you know, 3-17 looks to be 3-18 after tonight. That might be something you consider. Especially because their farm system isn't good either. So it's like, it's kind of same situation as the Nats, where you have this one guy he's not Juan Soto, but he's still an excellent player and will get you a haul. I wonder if they end up considering that.
If they're smart, they will. They got to realize that. I mean, I think they have realized they trade away Dylan Cease. They could have kept Dylan Cease, but they traded him away with 2 years of control left. I think if they're smart, they will trade Luis Robert. Because one, he just can't stay healthy.
And he'll be on the freaking Dodgers.
Right. He can't stay healthy, but two, it's like they need assets and they're already not good. So it's not like you're tearing it down. He's just like, he's like the last really valuable commodity left. And then you're going to have probably 5 to 6 years, like a Pirates, if you're lucky, Orioles type rebuild, where it's just pain after pain after pain. But at the very least, you don't have those high expectations. Right. But it's going to be ugly in the South Side for a while. This team has little to no appeal. And you kind of just, you know, you get what you get. We talked about it. So, this team is really, really bad. And I think they should trade whoever they can to get whatever they can.
Yeah, those 2020 and 2021 teams are long gone. And it feels like it's been forever since they were here, even though it was only like two seasons ago when they were kind of good.
It's been forever
since you've been gone. Great duet. All right. Yeah. Moving on to our final segment. This one's a fun one. It's the first standings check of the year.
Let's do it.
We're going to be hopping into a little contender versus pretender because the standings are weird. The central divisions in both the American League and the National League might be the best divisions in those leagues, which is not at all what we anticipated coming into this year, although the American League East is still very strong. But there are some teams that have surprised so far that we wanted to talk about as, you know, can they win a playoff series, basically? Are they a contender to win a playoff series, or will they get bounced before the playoffs, or maybe not be able to win a playoff series? So we've got a pretty long list, 9 teams. So we're going to go a little rapid fire. But Nick, let me start off with the Royals, because I know that you really like the Royals, and I know that you're high on the Royals. Does this start surprise you, or are you in on the Royals to be a contender?
No, I'm in on them. And by contender, for them specifically, and I guess just the AL Central teams, I'm just talking about winning the division, because that's the only path that they would get to the playoffs. I don't view them as a wild card team. And I know that sounds backwards, but it's just such a weak division. You can win the division with 84 wins, but I don't think 84 wins get you as a wild card team. So that's why there's that important distinction there. I'm in on the Royals. They clearly want it. Like, when a front office is as aggressive as they were, as the Royals were this offseason, you know, not only just signing the veterans for the influx of talent, but locking up your franchise cornerstone to an aggressive market deal. Like, I think it shows belief and faith in the team, and that shit is contagious. The players want to win. So I think they're a legitimate contender. This is not a team that you should, they're not the Royals of like the 2018, 2019 variety. Like, this is a much, much better Royals team. And no, it would not shock me if they win the division, just because we'll get to in a second. I don't think the Guardians start is sustainable. Certainly not over 162. This is going to be a race in my mind between the Guardians, Tigers, and Royals. And it wouldn't shock me at all if the Royals came out on top.
Yeah, and another thing, you know, they look like a different team, but also the front office turned a corner. I would not be surprised at all if they add a big bat at the deadline to try and push towards that. That's probably what they're missing.
Robert?
Is a big, big power. I mean, if you have the option to get him, then obviously you can't really turn it down, and depending on the asking price, of course. But
right, I don't know what their farm system is like.
A home run guy.
But
I don't actually either. I'm going to have to do some research into that. But yeah, you mentioned the Guardians. You don't think that's sustainable. I think that's fair. They had a pretty easy start to the year. They played the A's twice. They played the White Sox. They played the Twins, who have been injured and struggling. And they did play pretty well against the Yankees. They did not win that series, but they took one. They played strong. So that was at least encouraging. I don't think it's going to sustain either, but I am. You can't deny the result. I mean, you can only play who you play.
Right.
Done really well. Their offense has looked amazing. So if they can put together some really good series against some good teams, I might be willing to change my mind on them. But right now I'm also kind of in the pretender zone with them, but good start for them. That's some good stuff. We talked about the Red Sox. Do you think they could make a push to make the playoffs?
I don't think so. I am already kind of adjusting my preseason expectations for them from a below 500 team to about an 85-ish win team. And I just don't think that's quite good enough, because I think the Orioles and Yankees will definitely be in there. Obviously, whoever wins the AL Central, I still think the AL West gets its act together. And I think we'll talk about that here in a minute. But I'm still holding my belief that three teams will come out of the AL West. Not that they won't, the Red Sox won't be in the conversation. I just don't think they get there. I think there's too many issues on offense and the defense. Pitching staff's great, yeah, but it's not good enough.
I'm in agreement. I think they'll hang in there a little longer this year, but they won't quite get there. But yeah, some encouraging stuff from them as well. And then the Tigers, you also mentioned, I've been super impressed with them. You know, the offense hasn't lit anybody up, but the pitching staff, man, they've got a lab in Detroit. Especially that bullpen has been unbelievable. They've also had a somewhat easy schedule to start the year. So again, I'd like to see them taking on someone. I'm gonna say pretender. I think they're still not quite there, and I can't see them being as aggressive at the deadline. I feel like the Royals would be aggressive, where the Tigers might be a little more hesitant. But they gotta sign. I mean, I know they're probably having cold feet because of Javi, but man, they really need to sign that superstar, or like that, because I don't think that they have the superstar on their roster. I think they have a lot of good role players, but they need that one guy, and they don't quite have. Although on the pitching staff, Tarik Skubal might be that guy.
Right.
He's been really, really good. But are you thinking that they could have a chance? I'm guessing no, because you like the Royals, but
I would still say no. Like, the Guardians have an easy schedule, but they did what they were supposed to do. You know, they're 16-6. They put up 124 runs versus allowing 72. That's a plus 52 run differential that leads baseball. So like, they're playing weaker competition, but they're handling it as they should handle it. They're not playing down to the level. Tigers have had an easy schedule. They have a plus one run differential and they're 12-10, which is fine, especially by, you know, recent Detroit Tiger standards. I think AJ Hinch is one of the best and probably more underrated managers in baseball. I think everyone tries to write him off because of the whole Astros scandal thing. He's just a damn good manager. That, quite frankly, this Tigers team on paper, talent-wise, is not very good. Like, I don't care who tries to convince me. They have pieces. Skubal's great. You know, I'm interested in Riley Green and other things like that. But this team is not very good. But they still always finish around 500, are way more competitive than they should be. So I think they're solid, but I just don't see it this year.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably right around 500 as well. I've also got the Mariners. I think we already know the answer, because I feel like we've both established that, where you jumped on the bandwagon.
It's World Series. It's World Series.
Contenders, right, baby. They're winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
As we all know,
they're not just a contender. They're the contender. That's who it is. It's the World Series runs through Seattle.
The district baseball odds on favorite.
This is how it goes. It runs through Seattle.
When you get the district baseball sports book, you'll get the best, or you get the worst odds actually on Mariners. All right. Heading over to the Reds in Cincinnati. I like what they've been doing so far. A lot of young talent there. I'm not convinced about their pitching staff, but
agreed.
Can their bats find enough firepower to lift? I think they can, but once again, do those Western Division teams get it together? Probably. So I'm going to say that they're not quite going to make it, but it wouldn't be the most surprising if they snuck in as that last wild card team.
To me, it feels like it's got to be the Cubs. It just has to be, just one way. It just has to be.
Yeah, I know the Reds can only make it, I feel like, with a wild card berth. Because I agree, I think the Cubs are far and away the although the Brewers,
right?
I forgot to even mention here, but they're playing really well. We'll see how long that sustained. But I don't think it is.
I don't think the Brewers. I think they'll end up faltering. But to me, the division, it feels like it has to be the Cubs. And I know that's not the most hard-hitting analysis, but that's just my gut. It feels like it has to be the Cubs. They're going to figure their shit out. Not that the Reds aren't good. Obviously, the Cubs situation has nothing to do with the Reds. It's just, I don't see them being a playoff team. I still think at least two teams coming out of the West. You know, the Phillies or Braves, whoever doesn't win that division, come out of the East. And then, so yeah, the Reds could be in play for that final wild card spot, but it still feels like whether it's the Giants or the Padres or, you know, one of these other teams that just get their act together in the second half, it feels like they're ahead of the Reds. I don't like the Reds pitching. They have a lot of fun, young talent. I'm happy to see Eclipse De La Cruz, you know, turn it on because I was honestly tired of people just kind of like writing him off because he struggled last year. He was a rookie. Rookies are allowed to struggle. So I'm glad to see him turning it on as of late. But their pitching is still so bad. It's bad. They have some pieces, but overall it's bad. So yeah,
Hunter
Green just
again got the Phillies. I mean, the Phillies offense right now is going nuts, but tonight Hunter Green not great against the Phillies.
Right. So I just don't think they're there yet. They can be in the conversation, but I'm going to say pretender.
Yeah, that's. I feel like them and our next team, the Pirates. They're, you know, we're going to see them between probably 80 and 85 wins. That's where I'm going. I think the Pirates have improved this year. I'm not. I think they had 76 wins. I feel like they'll be around, like right around 500, and then maybe next year could be something special because of the way that rotation could shape up with Jared Jones, Mitch Keller, and adding Paul Skenes, who has looked really, really, really good in the minor league so far. I know that you like this Pirates team to maybe finish second in the division, but I think you've already established that the Central is only getting one team. So I'm assuming you're saying pretender, but I'll let you speak your piece.
Yeah, it feels like a year too early. Obviously, the Pirates are in the midst of a 6-game losing streak, which sucks. But, you know, we've seen midseason call-ups really ignite a team if Paul Skenes does come up soon, which it feels like he probably should. Skenes, Jones. Yes, I know there will probably be like a pitch limit and skipping starts and stuff like that. That much I understand, but like, Skenes, Jones, Keller is a really, really good top half. You add
Martin Perez has actually pitched well,
right?
As well.
Yeah, he has. So it's like, it just feels like Dick Mountain needs to take that fifth spot in the rotation. Like, go call Rich Hill. But yeah, like it feels a year too early, but I'm still pretty bullish on the Pirates as a whole. But I do think it might be a year too early, so I'm going to say like 79 wins. But really, yeah, really solid compared to where they've been.
They're a little streaky as well, so when they're fun, they're really fun. But yeah, they've been on a little bit of a down swing the last week. And then we've got two more, one of which is kind of funny because I don't really think that they have a chance in hell, but they've got one of the best players in the world, and they got a new – pretty good manager, and that's the Angels. I know that you're a fan of Ron Washington, as am I. And he could potentially make a difference there. I saw that Mike Trout there was something about Mike Trout the other day that was floating around about how basically he is refusing any trade nonsense. He's like, no, I'm going to drag this team to the playoffs no matter what. And I kind of respect it. I don't think it's going to happen, but you know, I respect the hustle there. I'm not in on the Angels, although right now the AL West has not been that great, specifically the team in Houston. So what do you think Ron Washington does for this Angels team?
I think he just gives them some semblance of competency, honestly. Not that Joe Maddon didn't, but it does seem like Joe Maddon, and I know I'm going back a little bit, but it does seem like Joe Maddon was a little bit overrated and, you know, was a product of the talent around him. Not that the Angels haven't had talent, but he couldn't like elevate a team. He just made good decisions, if that sort of makes sense. And then Phil Nevin was just kind of a stopgap in my mind. Ron Washington, he has experience, a long, long history of coaching in baseball, was a manager previously. Like it just feels like he has no issues putting his hand in the mud, right? And like trying to build something and, you know, just knock off all of the inconsistencies, all of the dumb mistakes. I'm not considering the Angels a contender at all, but it does seem like their floor won't be as low as it was previously because they have a manager who like is so grateful to be managing again that, you know, he might be managing with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And everything you hear about Ron Washington is like, he's a player's coach. He really cares. He's really invested. So I think he will and has been making a difference, but I also think the Angels just aren't very good. Like you do still need some talent to, you know, win games. And what was that? The prop bet that we said on Anthony Rendon. Yeah. He's on the IL right now.
Yeah. He just, I know he just hit the injured
leg. Hamstring. So yeah. Not that they were.
That was a legit injury, though. To be
yeah,
fair,
yeah, sure, sure.
It actually, some of it have been like whatever, but
right. Not that they were counting on him for 162, but it's like it's really just Mike Trout right now, and then some guys you're hoping take that next step to be key contributors, but no one's really there yet. The rotation's really iffy. They have a long way to go. Mike Trout, you're admirable, but. People are
I'm already dreading
the conversations the day Trout becomes a first ballot Hall of Famer. Everyone's like, no, we shouldn't be because he never made the playoffs. Like, I'm already dreading those kinds of conversations.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna be a headache for sure. I think what your point about Ron Washington caring is certainly been on display for years in Atlanta as he has been basically like a full-time infield coordinator as well as being their main bench coach and third base coach, because he was out there with guys for hours before the game working on infield drills. So I mean he's not a young dude either. I mean he's up there now, so he's still getting after it. That's definitely commendable, and I like him as their coach. The Padres, final team for this segment. Interesting team, weird team, weird off season. They're playing okay. It's kind of been a little bit inconsistent, but they're doing all right. Dylan Cease has looked pretty good for them. There's still plenty of talent here. Can they get it together mentally? You know, that's kind of been the whole thing. Is their clubhouse has been an issue before? Can they put that all aside and get it going? I personally don't think so. I still think that they are a pretender, but there is still a chance if, you know, Tatis can take that MVP step, Manny can get it back going. There's still plenty of pieces here, but they're definitely going to need those guys to get it going, because I believe they're 12-12, so they still need to get those big guys really going to have a chance. But do you think they have a chance?
Honestly, yeah, I do. Okay. I think they have the top end talent. It's just getting those guys going, like you mentioned. You know, Tatis, Machado, really good. Oh, but Bogarts is still there as well. I keep forgetting because all their guys move all over the field. So I was just like going through their infield in my mind, and I'm just like, oh well, Kim's at short.
Yeah, they need Cronenworth to step it up as well.
Right. But like they have good role players like Kim and Cronenworth. And I mean, Jackson Merrill has gotten off to a pretty good start as well. Luis Campusano has gotten off to a good start. I think he's cooled off a little bit recently, but he got off to a great start. So it's like they have the role players, the rotation. Dylan Cease, I think Yu Darvish is hurt right now. Joe Musgrove, and who's the fourth guy? I'm forgetting. My mind's drawing a blank.
They have the knuckleballer as well. He pitches.
They do, but there's another starter that I just my mind is.
It's not Blake Snell anymore.
Nope, it was someone else. And
yeah,
yeah, my mind is drawing a blank. Anyways, like they have the pieces in place, and I think now it's actually kind of a unique situation. Michael King is who I was thinking of.
Yeah. He went. Oh my God. He almost threw a freaking no hitter. God. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That it was really bothering me that I couldn't remember this.
That's an L for me as well. I watched that game.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on trivia and make you look stupid this time. But so they have the pieces, and I think now they're in a unique situation where they don't have the expectation. They don't have the pressure. I'm sure they have internal pressure as most teams do that want to succeed. But they don't have the media pressure, the outside hype, the, you know, the standards they have to live to, or all this stuff. they can kind of just play. It seems at least early on in the year, the division's kind of playing down. So we'll see if they can kind of take advantage of a weaker start, because all these games matter. You know, you see plenty of situations in late September where teams are separated by a game or two. That means inherently that games in April matter, right? So it's like, if they can take advantage and build a little bit of a cushion by the time the Dodgers get their shit together, by the time the D-backs start rolling, by the time the Giants figure out that they don't have to be as bad as they are, like, you know, at least the Padres will have a little bit of a cushion. So I actually do think they're contenders. They're not like in the top three or four teams in the NL, but I think they're contenders.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I like if that lack of pressure is real, like if it really can, if that was really the issue last year, the pieces are there. That's for sure.
Right.
Like, there's no doubt this team's got talent. I feel like, you know, it's still early, so technically all these teams are still in it.
Nobody's eliminated yet on April 22nd.
Not quite, except for the White Sox.
Except for the White Sox.
I think we can go ahead and chalk that one up. But yeah. There is definitely still the talent there, and I would love to see them compete, because I want to see any team from that division give the Dodgers trouble, because it's just fun. It's just more fun when it's more competitive. But yeah, that was contender versus pretender. I really like that segment.
Yeah, we'll have to do that periodically, maybe like in a month from now, as mm-hmm. we get, you know, 20, 25 more games or so, figure out where the divisions lie, the standings lie, and what teams have started to separate themselves or gain ground or what have you. But really good segment. I like checking in on the standings every so often to see where teams are, because it's so easy to get distracted by all the crazy stuff going on in baseball. But that kind of does it for this episode. We will be back next week, again, recapping all the week's happenings around baseball. This week, as Trey mentioned, we're just doing audio only. Wanted to get an episode out there. Didn't want to go 2 weeks without talking. So just audio only this week. But we appreciate you guys supporting us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please be sure to like, subscribe, review. We really, really appreciate it. And this episode will still be on our YouTube page as well. It obviously just will be video, but be sure to subscribe, hit the bell. Trey does great work on YouTube, so we would sincerely appreciate that as well. And follow us on the meantime on Twitter at DistrictBSB, Trey at Reverse2R2S's, and myself at The Coach Moose. Again, we'll be back next week recapping week, what, 5 of the MLB season? Something like that?
I believe so.
Looking forward to it. All right, Trey, appreciate you. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, let's go baseball.
Let's go baseball.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.